Well, the lesson this morning is on one of these, and if you've been paying attention to the songs, you might be able to guess which one it is. The Ten Commandments, here abbreviated, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make a graven image and bow down to it. You shall not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath, keep it holy. Honor your mother and your father. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet." Do you remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, there was a man in that congregation, in that very, very wicked, wicked, wicked city, whose lifestyle was even more wicked than his Gentile neighbors. He was in a relationship with his own father's wife. And Paul directed the church there to put him out. And he said, "For any man that is named a brother, if he is a fornicator or an idolater," and you remember what he also said? "Or covetous, put them out." Covetousness. Thou shalt not covet. What does word covet mean? Well, the Hebrew word in the Old Testament, actually the Greek word in the New Testament, is not necessarily a bad thing. It's within the context of where the desire is. The Hebrew word there, chamed, it means to desire, to covet, to delight in anything. And you know what? We sing a song where we use this a lot. "The judgments of the Lord," from Psalm 19, "are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than the honeycomb." Guess what word that is? That's chamed. That same word. Now somebody might say, "Well, why? Why would it say we should have this when the Ten Commandments say don't have it?" It's the context. The Ten Commandments didn't just say don't covet. It said don't covet what is your neighbors. So, you can desire something that's good and you have a right to desire that. Or you can desire that which you don't have a right to desire. Here's some other texts. In Genesis chapter 2, before mentioning some other trees, it says, "Out of the ground the Lord God made to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food." This is not talking about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This is talking about all these other trees out here. You know what the word? The word pleasant there? Desirable. Same word. But then, after Adam is told, do not eat from this tree over here, after being tempted, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise. Same word there. And, of course, Achan. You remember when he has stolen the things and buried it under his tent? He said, "When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, I coveted them. I desired them. And I took them. And behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent." Desire is not wrong, but there's things we have a right to desire and should desire, and there's things that we shouldn't be desiring. So, the commandment is not just do not desire, listen to it. "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not cover your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's." In fact, there's two other commandments here, you see, that are violations of an extension of this. What happened before somebody committed adultery? Somebody coveted his neighbor's wife. What happened before somebody stole? Somebody coveted his neighbor's property. Coveting can often land in that in between envy and greed. Now, covetousness goes on to extend to just greed and inappropriate things that we'll be talking about. But one spot of it is where somebody's got something. I want that, and they've got it. And you've got the envy there. And then there's just the greed of wanting something. And a really ripe spot for covetousness is right in between there. And it can be property or it can be other things too. As we'll see. The New Testament word, just like the Old Testament word, can be used in a positive sense. Matthew 13, the same word when it's like in Romans 13, talks about thou shalt not covet. That word is epithemeo, and it's the same word when Jesus says, many prophets and righteous men desired to see the things that you see. When Jesus said, with desire, I have desired to eat this Passover with you, same word. And it's the word lust after in Matthew 5. So it's the word covet. So in other words, but I say unto you, whoever looks upon a woman to covet her, to desire her, he's already committed adultery in his heart. Look at this one. Luke 16, 21. The rich man and Lazarus. Did Lazarus desire the rich man's property? Was he being covetous? Look what it says. He desired to be fed with the crumbs that fell from the rich man's table. Lazarus not sitting there resentful and envious. Oh, he has purple robes. I wish I had his purple robes. Oh, he's eating sumptuously every day. I wish I had that. That's not what he's wanting. What's he just wishing for? He's not wanting to take from the rich man. He's just wishing he could have the crumbs that fall from the table. There's a difference there. And of course, there's a contrast set up for how it's going to be after their death. And you're going to see the rich man just wishing for just the tiniest little bit thing here. He's not being covetous, but he would have appreciated just the waste. You know, in this country, we're going to talk later about real poverty and such. There are people who in their dreams would love to have what we throw in the garbage every day. And Romans 13, all these other commandments, you shall not kill, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not covet. Paul reminds us they are all summed up in this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. If you love your neighbor, you're not going to covet what he has. Covetousness can involve a lot of other things. Not every example, and we're going to look at different types of coveting. But some of the other sins and problems that come into play, of course, is greed, jealousy, resentment, disregard for other people's rights and property, ingratitude for what we've got, discontent. And you get all that going on, and you get a really poisonous brew in somebody's heart. But you know what's behind all of it? Selfishness. Which is why Paul said, what? If you will love your neighbor as yourself, which is being unselfish, you're not going to do these things. But if we're being selfish, you can make yourself miserable. If you don't want somebody to have something that you don't have. Because there will always be people that have something we don't have. And so if you're one of those people that makes yourself miserable, oh, they've got that and I don't, just prepare for a life of misery. Because you made a very, very, very foolish approach to life. The fact is, every single person here has things that other people would love to have and don't. But that doesn't mean they're covetous of you unless they're sitting there being resentful and wishing that they had yours and you didn't, and that type of thing. If you can walk, how many people that are crippled would like to be able to do what you have? If you live in a free country, how many people in North Korea would enjoy having the freedom that everybody in this room has? We can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. If we started counting our blessings, we could be here all day. Resentment. Resentment is one of those things. And here's a good example of resentment. Look at 1 Kings chapter 3, 16 and 28. Sometimes resentment is involved, and it's not even that you're wanting what somebody else has. You're just mad that they have it and you don't. So I'm going to explain example number two before we read this passage. When in 1989, when the Berlin Wall was opened up, shortly after that, I made the decision to move to East Europe. And so we as a family, we moved to East Europe and lived there for about a year behind what had been the Iron Curtain. And then we went back and lived there another year. In fact, that's where we moved from when we came here back in the 90s. But one of the things that was striking about living in a country just coming out of communism, all cultures have their strengths and weaknesses. And there were some admirable things about the East Europeans that I lived around. But in the nation where I was, there were two ugly traits that seemed to be recurring and were, I think, direct result of communism. One was suspicion. They were a suspicious people because of all the secret police. There was an old saying that said, if you have four friends, one of them is secret police and you don't know which one it is. So you can imagine how that made people uncomfortable. But the other was jealous. They were jealous people so often. And it's like one fellow said, we were trained to resent somebody having something we didn't have. So communism was presented as, here, well, you know, take from the rich and make sure. But then it's you resent if somebody has something you don't have. So there was an old joke, one of my favorite jokes from then. I was in the Czech Republic, but this was a Russian joke that I heard over there, and it went like this. A genie offers one wish to an Englishman, a Frenchman, and a Russian. And the Englishman says, I want a country manor. He's got it. The Frenchman says, I want a chateau and a vineyard. He's got it. Then he looks at the Russian, and he says, what do you want? My neighbor has a goat, and I don't. Kill the goat. And that's the type of thing that we're about to see in this passage. Look at 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 16. These two women, or two prostitutes, depending on your translation, came to the king and stood before him. The one woman said, oh my Lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was in the house. Then on the third day after I gave birth, this woman also gave birth, and we were alone. There was no one else with us in the house. Only we two were in the house. This woman's son died in the night because she lay on him. She arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while your servant slept, and laid him at her breast and laid her dead son at my breast. When I rose in the morning to nurse my child, behold, he was dead. But when I looked at him closely in the morning, behold, he was not the child that I had born. But the other woman said, no, the living child is mine. The dead child is yours. The first said, no, the dead child is yours. The living child is mine. Thus they spoke before the king. Now, they don't have DNA tests. Nobody took the footprints of these babies born there at the house. How are you going to figure it out? Then the king said, the one says, this is my son that is alive and yours is dead. The other says, no, but your son is dead. My son is the living one. The king said, bring me a sword. So a sword was brought before the king. The king said, divide the living child in two. Give half to the one and half to the other. The woman whose son was alive said to the king, because her heart yearned for her son, oh, my Lord, give her the living child. By no means put him to death. But the other said, he shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide him. And then Solomon knew what? Now he knows who the mother is. But you see what the other woman said? It wasn't, she wanted, she took the child, but even more than wanting it, it's like, you're not going to get what I didn't get to have. Go ahead, chop them in two. Neither of us will have a son. There are people who are like that. Ugly thing. Jealousy. This is Saul. Saul. There's Goliath. He's daring somebody to come meet him, challenging the Israelites. None of the army wants to meet the challenge. Who is one of the biggest guys around over on this side? Well, Saul. Does Saul want to go up against him? No. Who's willing to go up against him? David. But then what happens after that? Well, the women start singing songs. And they start singing about how much greater David is than Saul. How'd Saul feel about that? Oh, he can't stand that. And his anger burns within him. He says, what more can he get now but the kingdom? He throws a spear at him. People can be jealous over property. People can be jealous over other things in life too. Ingratitude, Korah, number 16. Here again, we see the jealousy. It says, Moses, you make too much of yourself. You know, I should be able to do this too. And one thing, and Moses steps back and lets God answer it, which results, of course, in the destruction of Korah. But it was pointed out, here you're getting to be one of the Levites. Look at some of the blessings Korah's got. Where was he before they got out there? He was a slave in Egypt. Where's there an opportunity to be headed to if they'd have gone out and behaved correctly? A promised land. One of God's chosen people. And among God's chosen people, he gets to be one of the Levites for special service. But that's not enough for him, is it? That's not enough. He's got to have what somebody else has. Doesn't work out for him. And then there's this disregard. One of the things, covetousness often leads to theft. Well, not always. But theft is preceded by a covetousness. And one of the things that's despicable about a thief is just how little they respect other people. They don't want to work and have to work for that and wait for that. Instead, if you are not home or you left your car unlocked or something else, they just don't care at all about their taking your property. It's just the total disrespect. And this guy was in the news this week. I love this story. So this was earlier in the week, and he breaks into a home in Wisconsin. And he goes through a back door. Now, I would really not want to be this guy right now. He got discovered by a chihuahua. So in the house is a chihuahua. The chihuahua starts barking and alerts the homeowner, who's 95 years old. So the 95-year-old and the chihuahua go back to see what's going on. They open the door, and here's the burglar. Then he threatens to kill this 95-year-old man and his dog if you don't give me your wallet. What kind
of a human being. What? You're threatening to kill a 95-year-old man and his dog if you don't give me your... Who do you think you are? Well, this made the 95-year-old fella pretty mad. And he happened to be a Marine. he tackles him. But the fella manages to get the wild out of his pocket. So the 95-year-old Marine calls for backup. His 51-year-old daughter. So she comes running down the stairs. She gets the wallet from him. He gets out of the house. She chases him down. She's barefoot. It's December in Wisconsin. She chases him over 12 yards and a couple of fences. And she didn't want to apprehend him until she saw a police car. But once the police car got within sight, because she was yelling and stuff, you know, telling people to call, he got hung up on a picket fence. She got him and turned him over to the police. Yeah, so he's where he needs to be. And probably not talking a whole lot about why he's there, but I imagine words got around. That's one kind of crook and covetous person. But you know what? There's another kind, too. Look at Luke chapter 20. Verse 46, beware the scribes who desire to walk in long robes and salutations in the marketplaces, chief seats in the synagogues, chief place at the feasts. What do they do in verse 47? They devour widows' houses. How do you think they did that? You think the scribes just like went around and said, hey, after we said our prayers and everything today, let's go find a widow and just beat her up, throw her in the street, and steal her house? Oh, no. It would have been done how? Legally. There's all sorts of ways in which we can transact legal business and still be absolutely covetous, where we are eager to take advantage of someone else's misfortune. There's a lot of industries built on trying to bait poor people into ridiculous loans, you know, loans that they're not going to be able to pay back, different things and such. And you can just see, oh, she's got no money. And it's like, say maybe, and then it's like, you're behind, and then boom, wow, look at all that equity I got. Matthew chapter 21, Jesus cleanses the temple from the money changers and the people selling the sacrifices for idols. What are they doing? Are they stealing from people? No, but they're charging exorbitant prices. So this is already, and it was the sons of, I think, was it Zadok? Among the Sadducees who ran these things. And of course, they're getting the income from it. Later, when one of the presidents of the Sanhedrin brings about some reforms, according to Josephus, prices go down from a ratio of 100 to 1. So what's been going on there, it's like, oh, you're from out of town, you want to make a sacrifice? Here you go. And so they're just manipulating, taking advantage. There's lots of times, and suppose your neighbor's gotten laid off. Suppose you've always wanted his house or his boat or his shotgun or his car. And then you start seeing, you play that right, you wait till the right time, and wow, this can sure work out handily for who? Is that covetousness? Now, are there some times when someone might be in a financial situation that it might profit both parties? Yes. You know, if somebody's in a pickle and they don't want to ruin their credit and some things have hit them in life, and they would want, it would be better for them. I'd like to turn this over, and they make a deal with you, and you try to be fair to them, and there's some benefit. A valid transaction benefits both people, helps both people. But there's a lot of things that go on in business that are about not helping both people. It's about what? In the book of Amos, it talks about the greedy Israelites who just pick the dust off the scalp of the poor. Just strip them of everything that they've got. That's a disregard for other people too. What does Paul say will prevent covetousness? Love your neighbor as yourself. So when you're selling that used car, and you say, I'm not going to tell them about what the really big thing that I know is wrong with it. What's that? You see the covetousness there? Some covetousness involves illegal activities. Some just immoral, but perfectly legal here, but not in God's eyes. And then there's just greed, Achan. He knew it's forbidden, but he just wants it. 1 Kings chapter 21, you remember Ahab? You're king, Ahab. But what does he want? Naboth's vineyard. And when he can't have Naboth's vineyard, and that's this clear case of coveting there. And he's just miserable. And he won't eat it. And what's the matter? Naboth won't sell me his vineyard. So she arranges to have him framed and killed. And then what's Ahab got? He's got Naboth's vineyard. Just greed. Look at Luke chapter 12. Foolish fella here has an opportunity to speak to Jesus, the Messiah. And he wastes it on this selfish question. Verse 13, one out of the multitude said to him, Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me. So the inheritance is all obviously going to this brother over here. And this guy, you see the jealousy, you see the greed. Jesus, make him give me half of that. What does Jesus say? Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said, take heed, keep yourselves from all covetousness. Listen to this. A man's life consists not in the abundance of the things he possesses. I remember a bumper sticker one time said, he that dies with the most toys wins. No. Not so. A man's life consists not in the abundance of the things he possesses. He spoke a parable to them saying, and this parable follows Jesus saying, take heed. Guard yourself from covetousness. And then he gives the parable. You know this parable, and you know the selfishness of it. Let's read it. Certain rich man, his ground brought forth plentifully, and he reasoned within himself, what shall I do? Because I have not where to bestow my fruits. He said, this will I do. I will put down my barns and build greater, and there I'll bestow all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you foolish one, this night is your soul required of you. And the things which you have prepared, whose shall they be? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. I don't know what King Ludwig was like. I don't know in some ways what type of character an individual he was, but it's always been very ironic to me. King Ludwig was a king in the 1800s in Germany who just spent astronomical amounts of money building castles. And they're fantastic to see. The castle at Disney World is based on this one, I understand. This is roughly. This is Neuschwanstein, which is down in southern Bavaria, just above the Austrian line. So he had this castle built. It's really pretty fantastic. There's part of the view from his, this would be about from the throne room. And looking down there, is the castle where he grew up. So he grew up, that little castle down there, that's Schwanstein. That's where he grew up. And now he's built new Schwanstein. Out of his bedroom window, it's like to the east, you're just looking across plains and lakes. To the south, you're looking at like snow-covered Alps and Alp Lake. To the east, you're looking at a 500-foot waterfall out his bedroom window. I mean, this is really, really, really quite the place. There's the throne room. And you know how long you got to spend there? Yeah, 172 days. He built some other castles, too. This one he modeled after Versailles, and he bought an island, and he put it on, and he had it built on this island with a hall of mirrors and everything. And his dining room, the whole floor and table, the table and the floor underneath the table, is operated by crank, so he doesn't have to be disturbed by servants. So it goes down to the basement. They set his table, and it comes back up to him. So he can be in the room without even having to be bothered by another human being. Yeah, pretty fantastic. He got to spend 9 days there. All of that. It's cool to see now, but now whose are they? He's not there. There's a movie coming out. I wouldn't recommend going to see it. I think it's rated R or something. But the trailer is really interesting, and looking at the history behind it is interesting. It's called All the Money in the World. It's the movie with all these sexual harassment things. Kevin Spacey got fired out of the movie last month, and they already replaced him with Christopher Plummer, the guy from Sound of Music back in the 60s. Really cool. But this movie is about an actual event back in the 70s. Mr. Getty was the richest man in the world. His grandson was kidnapped, and he famously refused to pay the ransom. Now, part of the rationale was, I've got 14 grandchildren. If I pay this ransom, what have I just done to all my other grandchildren? I've endangered them. But in the trailer, there's where the fellow demands, you know, $17 million. And the mother says, I don't have that. She had been married to Getty's son. He says, you know, ask your father-in-law. He has all the money in the world. Well, they ask him, and he says, no. And I don't know how much of it, this is historical. He wouldn't pay. And then so they start dropping the price. They sent an ear in the mail. And he eventually paid $2.2 million. He was willing to pay that much because that's the most it would be tax deductible. They lowered the price of 3 point something million. He loaned the other to his son at 4% interest. In the trailer, you've got the CIA agent talking to him, and he says this. After Getty, played by Christopher Plummer, says, I don't have the money to spare. And I don't know that the actual, that's historical. I don't know that this conversation is historical, but it illustrates a biblical truth. The agent says, no one had been richer than you are at this moment in the history of the world. He said, what would it take for you to feel secure? And Plummer says, more. You know what Ecclesiastes 5:10 said? He that loves gold won't be satisfied with gold, nor he that loves silver with increase. Putting our prosperity in perspective, I want to give you three short stories and wind up here in just a few minutes. I have not seen the type of poverty that millions of people live in. You haven't either. But I'm going to tell you a little bit of what will get our attention, level of poverty. One time in Prague, we were invited over to dinner with this agnostic couple. I remember her name was Vera. We went to their flat. It was a fine flat. They had two daughters, and they made us a meal, had some nice potatoes and something else, and then we went for a walk, as they'll do, for a few hours, 3 hours, I think. And we talked, and there were some really interesting things that I learned about that family. His salary, annual salary, was $1,500 in crowns. I'm translating at the exchange rate at the time. If you took his annual salary, it'd be $1,500. She also worked, got $1,500 a year. They had two daughters. They said, sometimes we will buy a green pepper. We don't do it very often because they're expensive. But they really like green peppers. So sometimes we will buy a green pepper and let them split it. They recommended a restaurant to us. They said, you should go to... And they recommended this restaurant on Wenceslas Square. They said, we go there every year. So once a year, they would go out to eat at their favorite restaurant. And then one of them corrected themselves and said, actually, we didn't go last year because the price went up. Before the price went up, a dinner was about $3.50. The price had gone up about $1.50. So that year, they didn't go. Now, these were not terribly poor people. You might be thinking, that, how could anybody live? They lived. They had food. They had a warm place. They would go on vacation to Switzerland. You know how they would go on vacation to Switzerland? Through work, they could get a commute on the train. And they would take bread from Prague, and they would sleep outside. So they would ride the train. They'd get to Switzerland. They'd look around. They'd eat bread from Prague. And then they'd get back on the train after sleeping on the ground and go home. She asked me one time, at the end of our walk, we're walking in back toward the flat, and she asked me, Mike, she said, I have a question. She said, do most women in America work outside the home? And we said, yes. And she said, why? Do they do it because they want to or because they have to? Said, I do it because I have to. I wish I could be home with my girls. That's a pretty profound question. In Haiti, first time I went to Haiti, if I remember correctly, I was told per capita income per year was $80. This is back in the 80s, or maybe late 70s. Second time I went to Haiti, we went to lunch and we took our translator. I remember that day because that was the day the Challenger blew up, and it was the little TV, which it had just happened. But as we're eating lunch, it was like $3 and something. It's some meat and potatoes. When he got done, they could have probably used his plate for somebody else and without washing it, and they would have never known. Because, you know, he had used his bread and just sopped up every bit of that gravy and everything. I was at his house. He lived in... His whole apartment was a little bit bigger probably than from there to the wall. It was two rooms. He did have electricity. He was in Port-au-Prince, so there's like an extension cord, and he had a hot plate and a light bulb and a little cassette recorder. We bought him lunch that day. Later, at the in the trip one day, he'd done something for him, and I offered to buy him lunch, and he said, I really enjoyed that the other day. That was the first time he'd ever eaten at a restaurant. He said, I really enjoyed that. But if you don't mind, could you just give me the money that you would have paid for my lunch? Because I could use some of that to buy groceries for me and my sister and help out on my electric bill. His one or two light bulbs and his hot plate and his thing. And then, neither of those people as poor as they were compared to our prosperity, are anywhere near the condition that a lot of people are in the world that just don't have food to eat. There's some things we can do. There's some things we can't do. And I'm not saying, like, use this one, but I'm just going to mention it. And look around, and maybe if you like this one, think about it or find something else. This is a charity I've used a couple times, and I want to start using more. This is Heifer International. You can look up and find which charities, how they're ranked, you know, their financing stuff, and how much, a lot of money that goes to the people that run it. This one's not the highest ranked. I think they get a 3 out of 4, but it's highly ranked. And 75 cents of every dollar goes to, you know, the actual getting people helped. And one thing what it does is you can give livestock to a poor family somewhere in the world. So instead of just like, here's some supper for today, you can buy them a goat. You can buy them a couple goats. You can buy them an ox. You can buy them a flock of ducklings or a flock of chicks. You know, I think a goat's $120. I think a flock of chicks is $20. And the idea is you give poor families livestock that then they can start producing more and having eggs and milk and different things like that. I just like the approach that it makes possible for them to actually make a difference in their life instead of a one-time thing and be gone or something like that. But there's other ways to help too, and you might know, and of course, some of the best help is where we immediately help somebody, because there's people around here that need our help. Not at the same level, but there are people around here that need our help, and that can be especially important. But there's other ways that we can do to help people as well. Let's close with a couple of texts. 1 Timothy chapter 6. 6 through 10. This should challenge us. First Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Contentment. I'm sure everybody in this room, besides having many things that so many people wish they could have, everybody in this room can think of something that we don't have, that it would be nice to have. It might be something health-related, family-related, tragedy-related, job-related, whatever. Contentment. You remember the song we sang a few minutes ago? When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one. It will surprise you what the Lord has done. There's truth. Terrible things and suffering, and for all of us, eventually sickness and death that are going to happen to us, and pits that we can't avoid. Now, Psalm 16 promised that the Holy One wouldn't stay in the pit. Didn't say the rest of us won't go to the pit. But you know what? Self-pity can be a pit that we dig ourselves. That we keep digging deeper and deeper for ourselves. The thief started with covetous, and he may make somebody else miserable. The covetous person, you know who they make miserable? Themselves. Digging it away. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, neither can we carry anything out. But having food and covering, we shall be content.
But they that are minded to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare and many foolish and hurtful lusts, such as drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some reaching after have been led astray from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Our last two verses, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. Written in a context of put off the old and put on the new, and watch the transition here. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his things the thing that is good, that he may have whereof to give to him that has need. You see the opposite of the covetousness there? And our last verse, Acts chapter 20, verse 35. In all things I give you an example, that so laboring you ought to help the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than receive. Let's be sheep, not goats. If you need to respond to the invitation, won't you do so as we stand and sing?